And we lived in the housing authority area, if you will, growing up, you know, so there was a lot of kids in the neighborhood and bicycles and skateboards and all those kind of things. So we would take whatever we had, and you know, money was definitely an issue. So we would build pretty much whatever we needed. So if we wanted a bike or something, we would take several old bikes from different places and junk piles and things like that, and build stuff and put things together. And a lot of things we probably acquired, acquired in ways that we probably shouldn't have. We had us like our own little bicycle chop shop, if you will. We would disassemble these things and kind of reassemble them on frames and paint them and stuff like that to make bicycles that were not as recognizable by the authorities or the people that owned them and things. And I mean, I'm talking, I was, you know, 11, 12 years old doing this kind of stuff. And to make it worse, my father was a police officer.
Welcome back to the Make or Break Show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm Brandon Cullum, and this week we are chatting with Donnie Carter and how his maker journey took him from the chop shop as a kid to the lathe and the microphone. All right, confession time. You probably can already tell, but I've got a little bit of a Southern accent. Whenever I jump on these interviews, it comes out more and more, and people can poke fun at me at times, especially if you're not from the South. So imagine my surprise when I stumbled across a new woodworking podcast, plugged in my headphones, and hit play.
Are you ready to be filled with woodworking knowledge? Join us today on the Green Woodworker Podcast. Now, here is your host, Donnie Carter.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Green Woodworker Podcast. Thank you for joining us today.
When I heard Donnie's voice and his accent, I knew I was in for a treat. Donnie Carter is our guest this week, and his journey as a maker has covered everything from construction to cars to wood turning and podcasting. Donnie is also the host of the Green Woodworkers Podcast, which I highly encourage you guys to check out, especially if you like the interview format of the show. In fact, his show was a pretty big inspiration for me to get started. Now, before we get into this interview, I do need to apologize about one thing. In true make or break fashion, when I went to put the show together and I played back my audio, I found out that I recorded the entire interview with the internal microphone on my computer instead of the super fancy one, which you guys are hearing from right now. So sorry about that. That was my bad on my end. Now, Donnie, he sounds great. He is the podcasting pro after all. In fact, just before we recorded, he had put out episode 29 of his show.
29, which will be out this week. First of all, thanks, Brandon, for asking me to be on your podcast, man. I'm excited to see another woodworking or wood-esque podcast going on, and I appreciate you asking me to be on, man. Thank you.
Yeah. I've done some other podcasts in the past, and it's always fun talking to other podcasters because you have a really unique perspective because you talk to so many different people. And so not only are you able to share kind of what you've learned, but also what you pulled from others. So looking forward to diving into some of the awesome people we've had and Joe as well.
Yeah.
Well, to start off, I was going through your website and I noticed that you had the wife and the husband from Up, the picture. And then I also saw you got super excited about was it a wood turned Woody that Carl Jacobson had sent you?
Yes.
So where did the Up come from?
Well, Up is from the movie Up is my wife's favorite movie. And okay. It's actually a good little movie. It really is. It's, you know, it's a cartoon type, I can't even think of the name of the word, you know, but it's a really cute movie. And she gets super excited about it. And she also doesn't really care to have, her face on social media much. She doesn't do Facebook and things like that. So I decided, you know what, I'll put the picture of the husband and wife from Up on there, and boom, there you go. That will be my thing. Because she doesn't like being on, you know, having her face plastered everywhere like I do. You know, me, I'm trying to be everywhere. But yeah, that's where the Up reference came from. And then the Woody is actually, I won that in an auction last year. Steve Twidell from, what is Steve's channel? He's on YouTube, and he runs a charity for makers and stuff. He doesn't run a charity for makers. He runs a charity for children over in the UK. And last year was the first year where he got makers to make a whole bunch of items, and then they'll auction the items off, and he gives all the money to charity. I believe he actually works with special needs children and things like that. So when I saw Carl making this, I wanted to know who was going to make Woody to begin with. And then when my friend Carl Jacobson, who is the most, you know, one of the most incredible woodturners out there, when he said that he was going to make Woody, I told him, I said, no matter what, no matter, it doesn't matter, I am going to end up with that Woody doll. And the day of the auction, they were so inundated with people on the auction, it kept shutting the site down.
Oh, wow.
And I put a big bid up. I just went ahead and I put a big bid up. Well, it just so happens that after that, nobody else, it was just, nobody could bid. It was just insane. So anyway, I ended up with the Woody doll, and he proudly sits up on the TV stand there. And I have also another few things from Carl, and, you know, I collect stuff from other wood turners and makers and things like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's where that came from. I love owning pieces from other people, man. There's some incredibly talented people out there, and I have a bowl turned from Carl. I have several mallets from people. I guess I kind of collect mallets now. So, I inadvertently just started, you know, people sending them to me and things like that. And, so I love collecting things from other makers. It's awesome.
Gotcha. That's really cool. That's really cool. Well, I'd love to kind of get into your background with the making. When you were growing up, were you kind of the kid always building stuff, breaking stuff? Like, was that kind of your history growing up?
Yeah, it actually was. I grew up in a huge family. I'm one of eight kids.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and we lived in the housing authority ever area, if you will, growing up. And, you know, so there was a lot of kids in the neighborhood, and bicycles and skateboards and all those kind of things. So we would take whatever we had, and you know, money was definitely an issue. So we would build pretty much whatever we needed. So if we wanted a bike or something, we would take several old bikes from different places and junk piles and things like that, and build stuff and put things together. And I remember one time, and a lot of things we probably acquired, acquired in ways that we probably shouldn't have.
Oh yeah.
So we would kind of have to, you know, I guess kind of like, we had this like our own little bicycle chop shop, if you will.
That's
we would
awesome.
Disassemble these things and kind of reassemble them on frames and paint them and stuff like that to make bicycles that were not as recognizable by the authorities or the people that owned them and things. And I mean, I'm talking, I was, you know, 11, 12 years old doing this kind of stuff. And, to make it worse, my father was a police officer, and, you know, so that just made it worse for the whole area. But yeah, we're always making something, building something, you know, clubhouses in the woods and just always doing something to make something and stay busy. It was ever since I can remember being a kid.
That's cool. That's really cool. So, would you go to school for, or kind of what was your first career once you got through high school?
Well, let me tell you, my first ever experience with the real like woodworking or construction or anything, I think I was about 13 years old, 14 years old. And my first ever job all summer was to work for a man named Mr. Bankston. He owned a construction company. And my job that summer was to pull nails out of boards.
Oh, wow.
And restack that lumber. And of course, to me to this day, because I was so young, I swore that pile of lumber was 100 feet tall. I mean, it was just this massive, I don't know how many board feet of lumber, but I swore that it was more than you've ever seen at Home Depot or Lowe's. Now, whether it was that much or not, I don't know. But I know that I spent several months knocking nails out of boards and stacking those boards according to length. And that was the first thing I ever did. And he, like I said, he owned a construction company. So for many summers after that, I kind of just worked for him, just picking up around the job sites and things like that. And I love to see the process of things being built. I love new construction mainly. I love seeing a piece of dirt there and people build things with, you know, put the slab in and do the framing. And that's probably why I've built a couple of my own houses and things like that. But as far as schooling or anything, man, I was a horrible student in school. I think how I grew up and the time I grew up, I kind of had to maintain this persona of a person that I kind of had to be a little tough guy in the area we grew up and the things we did. So school was not on the top priority for me. So believe it or not, I actually ended up quitting school right in the beginning of my 11th grade. I quit high school, went out, got a job at like a grocery store, some other things, and then ended up grabbing a job with a construction company, doing some industrial construction and things like that. And then I really got into cars, got into automotive stuff with a couple of friends, and actually started working for Chrysler when I was 18 years old.
Oh, cool.
Like on an apprenticeship type program. And I worked for Chrysler for couple of different dealerships, but for a total of around almost 15 years, I spent working on cars. Now, that whole entire time, I always still loved making things out of wood and metal. And, you know, if something needed to be built, I wanted to build it. Even if it cost me, you know, $150 to build a $20 shelf, I still wanted to build that shelf, you know? And, so several times I collected tools and then had to sell tools and collected tools and had to sell tools just to, you know, to maintain, you know, bills and things like that. The adult stuff that, you know, that kind of sucks, but you know, sometimes you do what you got to do. And mainly I spent most of my life, like I said, being a mechanic. And then I got into, doing some work at airport runways all over the country. We would do runway maintenance. We would do rubber removal and paint removal, using these machines that a lot of them that I built for companies, for the company that I work for. And, still during that time, I just really started getting into woodworking more and more and more. And one day I was sitting around, I'm trying to remember what actually even made me think about it, but I either saw a video or something where someone said, you know, check local, see what's going on around you. And I did. I decided to look for wood turning clubs, and lo and behold, there was a club that met 10 minutes from me. That's cool. Once a month. So I got in contact with those guys and I said, you know, what do I need to do or whatever? And they're like, oh, nothing, just show up for the meeting. And this is what we do and things like that. Well, that was probably 3 years ago. And now I've been so inundated in this club. I mean, it's, I think I'm getting ready to take over the website because the president doesn't, you know, he does a lot of things. And I love wood turning. I love being in the club. I love being around makers. I hang around a guy almost every day, that we build stuff and things like that. So that's kind of a quick version of where I am today, as far as, you know, my woodworking and things like that. A lot of YouTube influence, Carl Jacobson, Stuart Batty. I know I'm going to forget a ton of names. I've been following Matt Cremona since day one. I've been one of Matt's supporters since day one. Mark Spagnuolo, of course. I mean, come on, the Wood Whisperer. I definitely remember his stuff. And then, of course, Norm Abram. I grew up watching, you know, I grew up watching Norm Abram on PBS. I mean, so I think that was probably one of my initial things, was like, man, I want to be like this guy. I mean, this is, you know, I thought he just had this, you know, wonderful life where once a week or all he did was build some stuff.
Yeah. That's really cool. So what was it about turning then? Were you looking specifically for wood turning, or was that kind of your just closest wood making club to you?
No, it was wood turning. Like I said, I really got hooked on Carl. I started watching a lot of Carl stuff and I really got hooked on what he was doing. So I started just looking up other wood turners on YouTube. And once I really kind of, I think what I really liked about it more than anything was the instant justification, you know, the instant gratification. You know, you could take this soaking wet green piece of wood, bring it in and trim it a little bit on a saw sometimes, or just cut a slice off and stick it on the lathe. And within an hour, man, you could actually take a finished product, a finished bowl all the way down within a couple of hours. And to me, that was just, it was incredible. And then I'm like, well, how are they doing that? And I needed to know how it was done. And when I went to my first meeting, I'm trying to remember what they were turning and what they were doing, but I just knew I was enamored right then. I went ahead and paid my dues. I joined the club the first visit I went, and they gave away free wood. So a lot of clubs, what they do to help support the club is they will bring in wood pieces and they'll have it cut up for like bowl blanks and things, and they'll auction it off. Well, at this club, we give away wood. So we have such an abundance of so many different types of wood. We bring in a big trailer load of wood, and we usually just give it away. Well, I didn't even have a lathe yet, and I'm just loading up piles of wood. And it was crazy. I said, you know, I've got to have this. I got to do something with this. And I'll be honest. I remember now exactly what turned me on to turning. I was a member of a wood working forum, or basically just a do all forum of handy people, you know, just woodworking and metalworking and all that. And I entered a giveaway, and I won a giveaway for a Nova Chuck.
Okay.
For a lathe. Well, I didn't have a lathe. So that's what started me off. Was I said, okay, I got a Nova Chuck. I need to find a lathe. So I did a little bit of research, very little. People kept telling me, well, you know, get as big a lathe as you can, get the biggest you can afford. And remember that the lathe is going to be the cheapest part of the whole thing. You have all these other tools and all this other stuff. And I think I had around $500 to spend on a lathe. So I went ahead and bought a Nova Comet 2 mini lathe. And when that thing came in, man, I just kept turning stuff. I mean, I would max that thing out with bowls and vases. And, you know, of course they weren't lying. You know, you needed these tools, and then you needed things to sharpen the tools. And then it was just this crazy whirlwind. And my wife's looking at me like, what is all this stuff you're doing? You know? And, every time we have a meeting, and if there's wood left over, well, I'm not going to let it go to the landfill, because that's usually what's going to happen. It gets brought to my house and gets dropped off. Well, so now at this point, I have a lot of wood here.
That's awesome.
And when I say a lot of wood, I'm not exaggerating. I mean, I have pecan, I have magnolia, I have camphor, river birch, sweet gum, sycamore, cypress, maple, walnut. It's incredible. I have these piles of lumber. So thank goodness someone in the club has a friend that bought a brand new sawmill. And he wants to show it to us and kind of do like a show and tell kind of thing. So I've kind of convinced them, hey, come show and tell it at my house, which is right down the street from where the club meets. And you can cut me some 6-inch slabs, which is perfect for bowl blanks.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll be happy, because all of it will be slabbed up, and this guy will be able to show everybody his new toy.
That's so awesome. That's really cool.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I was building a chess set, and I really wanted to make like a cool, like a bigger king or queen. And I was like, I don't really need to get a lathe to do that. So I was like trying to talk my wife into it, and it was like a project for her brother. So I was like, hey, man, he would love this. And so I got like one of the cheap, like Harbor Freight lathes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you're saying, like it's, you put it on there, it almost feels like magic. Like 10 seconds later, you got something circled, like it's round. You're like, what just happened? So it's so cool.
It is, man. It is just this magical thing. And I mean, like I said, I can go out, and now I've upgraded. I have a bigger lathe, so I can turn, you know, 18-inch bowls now. And, you know, I was thinking the other day, man, if I had just a little bit bigger lathe, just a little bit bigger. So, and I don't even dare tell my wife that I'm wanting a 20-inch lathe. I'm not even going to, you know. And then I said 20, but then I was looking at some lathes last night, and I'm like, oh, wow, Laguna's got a 24-inch lathe. And I said, okay, I need to nip this in the bud right now. But so I have a bigger lathe, and it's a lot more powerful, and you could just do so much more stuff with it. But, yeah, the lathe is such a magical a magical tool. It really is.
Yeah. Now, do you find yourself now mostly sticking with turning, or are you also doing furniture and other stuff on the side too?
It's all mainly been turning, and recently I've started making a lot of things like you would get at like craft show type stuff.
Okay.
Because I actually plan on doing my first craft show November the 14th. And I've done things, I've always done things like cutting boards and things like that. I've sold cutting boards all over Seattle, California. I do a lot of pins.
Okay.
I've had a lot of pins. I've shipped several to Canada and just all over the country. So, but as far as furniture, I definitely want to get into the furniture type of thing. And it's almost just a matter of space right now. I've done a few outdoor projects, some swings and things like that, like a porch swing type situation. But it's almost just a matter of space right now, uh-huh. as far as being able to do furniture. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's what's really, really stopped me more than anything, because we're kind of at a transition. I built the house that we're in right now back in, oh my goodness, it's only been about 6 years ago.
Okay.
And I've been trying for the past 6 years to decide on how big of a shop do I want to build. The house is in a really good location, but I also want to do some teaching. And I want to have people come in and be able to learn lathe stuff and also regular furniture making, or even just simple basic use of tool type things.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to decide if I want to build my shop here, if I want to build a shop at a different location. It's always just that logistics type thing. I'm in a good location. I have a nice chunk of land where people can stay at hotels if they want to come in from out of town to do classes, have guest presenters. That's my overall,
that's cool.
The big plan. But as of right now, I basically closed in some of our back porch. Now, when I say I closed in some of our back porch, I mean, I closed in a 15 by 15 area. So
Yeah. It's
a very big back porch. I mean, there's still, I've only used a little bit of the porch, but I noticed I wanted to start building some bigger things, some table stuff and like that. And I'm like, man, I just don't have the space.
Yeah.
Now I have been working on, laminated coasters and cutting boards. I've turned a lot of pins for this craft show coming up. I've done some cool clipboards, a lot of ideas that I got from David Picciuto's channel. And David actually has a playlist where you can go through and he basically shows you some of the best and best selling items for like craft show things, things people can go buy and go, oh, $20, $30, $40. Oh yeah, cool. Perfect. I even noticed recently I wanted to build some of these child growth rulers, that kind of like out of a 1x8, six foot tall. I mean, even just that piece of lumber is cumbersome in a 15 by 15 area trying to move it around.
Yeah.
You would never think about it because I have all these tools in my shop. I have a full-size rigid table saw. I have my jet lathe. I have this big 17-inch bandsaw. I have a big drill press and a planer and a joiner. And it gets everything has to be on wheels. And it's just, it gets a little frustrating. It gets a little tough. But I do, yes, to answer your initial question, I do want to get into more furniture stuff. But turning is always going to be my thing, as far as I can tell right now.
Gotcha. That's cool. So going back to just the turning piece, if there's folks that are listening, and I'm sure you've got this question before, and they're just wanting to get into kind of the basics of turning, like how would you, what's kind of like that little, almost like the little piece of the turning that you would really get them addicted to go, like, is there a certain project you'd recommend, or it's like, hey, if you just buy this lathe and these tools, get rock and rolling, like how would you get folks kind of into turning? Oh, I think you might still be muted. Maybe. There you go.
I'm going to tell you what I do. I go down to like Home Depot or Lowe's And I buy, believe it or not, I buy a single 2x4 and I bring that 2x4 back. And I cut the 2x4 in half and then I cut it into 8-inch pieces.
Okay.
And believe it or not, I take those 8-inch pieces and I put those on my lathe, and it's kind of almost like a warm-up session every day. Because when you're turning, there are only a couple of different moves that you do. You're either making a bead, you're making a cove. Everything is basically beads and coves. So as you're doing the outside of a bowl, you're basically making a big bead. As you're doing the inside of a bowl, you're kind of doing a cove. If you're making a chess piece, for instance, and those little finial looking pieces, everything is basically beads and coves. So my point is this: you don't have to have a $20 blank of wood to be able to start turning.
Gotcha.
You don't have to have a $7,000 lathe to start turning. I know many people who are very, very good turners that have started out with either the mini Harbor Freight or the bigger Harbor Freight. With the 25% coupon that they do, you can get a lathe for a couple $100.
Yeah.
Now, the most important part to me, getting the wood to spin is not really the big issue, because like I said, you can buy Craigslist, you can get a good lathe, you can get a decent lathe. It doesn't even have to be a decent lathe. Use that lathe for 6 months, and if you feel like you have the financial need, possibilities to upgrade and do something, find a maker in your area, make them pay $50 for the lathe from you, and pass it on to somebody. The biggest part of turning that I think people never understand is the tools. Now with the recent insurgence of carbide tools, it's turned a lot of people into turners, because now you can just take a tool and basically shove it into the piece of wood and form it around a little bit. I do like carbide tools. They do have their place, but I'm more of a traditional tool guy. When I first bought my lathe, the first thing I did was ordered the 3-combo set from Easy Wood Tools of carbide tools. Had no clue what I was doing, had no idea what was going on, but I was able to make some shapes. I was able to cut some stuff. What that did not do for me was not teach me the fundamentals of not true turning, but the fundamentals of using a bowl gouge or a spindle gouge. So I recommend, like I said, it's easy to buy something to get the wood spinning, but as far as using a cutting tool, absolutely hands down, don't buy the Harbor Freight cutting tools. Those are the worst tools on the planet. You can go to several retailers and buy some decent tools. Don't buy a set, because you're going to buy a set of turning tools that you have no idea about. You need a decent little bowl gouge, a decent little spindle gouge, and maybe a parting tool. With those few things, you can turn some amazing stuff. And the reason I like the traditional tools is because it gets your body into it. It gets everything that you have into that turn, because you're moving and you're finessing the tool and you're getting it to work. With a carbide tool, it's hard to explain, but you kind of just stick the carbide tool up there and you kind of just move it back and forth, and it just chops the wood away. And it just really kind of, to me, there's almost no life to it in a sense. There plenty of people have made some amazing stuff with carbide tools. I don't want to sound like I'm anti-carbide tool, because I do own several carbide tools, but they all have their place. But also remember that tools are going to be a little expensive, and then depending on the tools that you get, you have to have a way to sharpen them. So everybody talks about, you know, just go out and get you a lathe and a few tools and you'll be good to go and get started. But there are, honestly, and I don't want people to be misled, because if you get a tool and a lathe and you start turning and you don't know how to use the tool and the tool's not sharp, you're going to give up turning in a heartbeat, because it's going to be one of the most frustrating things you've ever done. But if you have just a little bit of instruction by some really good YouTube videos and you have a very sharp tool, you're going to find it really, really enjoyable. You can get a cut off of a really good sharp tool where you can start at, you know, 280 grit sandpaper.
Yeah.
If you get good enough. So remember that a cheap lathe is fine. It's not going to be the best when it comes to things like the tool rest and things like that. that's not going to be the most precisely ground or machined parts, but they're okay. You can, it'll give you a future appreciation when you do buy a high quality product. But the tools and things like that are something that you really need to pay attention to. You have to have a way to sharpen them and take care of them. So that's what I would say. You can realistically, for, you know, a few hundred bucks, be able to start turning with a Harbor Freight lathe and some pretty decent tools. You don't have to have all these chucks and jaws, and you can turn a bowl without a chuck. I mean, Mike Walt just recently did a couple of videos on how to turn a bowl without a chuck, because people think, oh, I have to have this, I have to have that. Because I watched Donnie's video and he's got a Nova Infinity chuck with removable jaws. And no, you don't have to have all that. It's because I'm a tool guy.
Yeah.
And I love tools and I love buying new stuff that I have a lot of the things that I have.
Yeah. 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 I have to check that one out, because I always thought I needed some type of special chuck, because I wanted to do a bowl. And I'm like, well, I got to support it from both ends and need to figure out a way to. So is that where you just drill? You basically just drill the blank in from the backside? Is that?
Yeah, you can go in between two centers and actually turn a bowl.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So what you basically do is you turn the outside of the bowl, and then when you flip it around to turn the inside, you've still got tailstock and face support. You can use a faceplate that comes with every single lathe. Every lathe comes with a faceplate. So you can screw the faceplate on, hollow the bowl out, do whatever you want to do, flip the bowl over, use tailstock support, and then just jam, chuck it up inside of the bowl and finish the outside of the bowl.
That's cool. Yeah.
I mean, it's that simple. I mean, it honestly is that simple. Now, is it easier to use a chuck and a vacuum chuck and all? Well, of course it is.
Yeah.
But I've been turning now for close to 3 years, and I am just putting together a vacuum chuck system.
Gotcha.
And it's the best thing in the world. I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah. You put this bowl up there, you line it up, and you turn the vacuum chuck on, and it's magic. It just, you can clean the bottom of the bowl off, and it's just incredible.
That's cool.
I mean, it is. It's really nice.
That's neat. That's really cool. Well, yeah. I kind of want to get into your podcast, so the Green Woodworker podcast. Make sure, if you guys have not checking it out, there's a link in the show notes. But how did you kind of start that? And then, have there been any guests that have really stood out to you, or maybe some lessons you've learned that were kind of like aha moments for you along the way?
Yeah. You know, the podcast, I learned, first of all, how to set up and do the podcast from Pat Flynn. Mm-hmm. Pat Flynn has the most incredible information on how to start a podcast out there on the internet. It's the easiest thing in the world to do, but yet I let it become the hardest thing in the world to do for years.
Yeah.
And it's just something I did to myself. It's just one of those things. When I interviewed Matt Cremona, this guy filmed and videoed for 5 years before he uploaded a video.
Did he really? That's crazy.
And it's incredible to even think that how many more Matt Cremonas are out there that have done things like that, that just, you know, that we need in our lives to, you know, what if Matt would have said, I just can't do it. I just can't do it. Honestly, I don't know where I would be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, you know, I made things harder than what I had to do. My guests have all just been incredible. It is absolutely a blessing, because I haven't been turned yet down from anyone that I've asked in the community. I try to do a mix of, I know it's called the Green Woodworker Podcast, and I kind of kick myself in the butt sometimes, because I don't want it to be labeled as only woodworkers.
Gotcha.
I want it to be more as, I'm the green woodworker and I'm looking for help.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And I know that many people are out there looking for help like I am. And I want to give these people a voice, because I know that everybody out there just may not want to contact somebody. They may look at a Mark Spagnuolo and go, I can't contact this guy. He doesn't know who I am. I'm that guy. I'm the guy to contact Mark. I'm the guy to contact Nick Offerman. I've sent requests for people like Jesse James. I will have him on my podcast one day.
That's awesome.
I have contacted some really big name people, because I want to be able to get the answers for all my internet friends and followers out there to help them along. That's why I'm not prejudiced to the people that I have on my show, meaning you don't have to have a number of followers or subscribers. You don't have to be making a certain amount of money. You don't even have to be a YouTuber. You don't even have to be on Facebook or Instagram. I talk to people who are out there making a difference, changing people's lives by sharing their information, giving tips and tricks to people. Now, yeah, take in mind, most of those people obviously are on some social media, but I talk to people who are in the real world doing businesses. I've got several lined up where there are actual true cabinet shop guys that run cabinet shops and do this day in and day out, 12, 15 hours a day, that are going to sit down with me and say, okay, here's the real deal.
Yeah.
Here's cool. Exactly what it takes to be a cabinet shop owner if this is what you want to do.
Yeah.
And that's what I get passionate about. That's what I want to share.
That's cool.
Now, I do have to admit, like I said, all my podcasts, all the interviews have just been incredible. I love each and every one of my guests, but the most recent, Rob Ryan, Ginger Woodworks, this guy was so passionate and is so passionate. It's incredible. It's the biggest response I've had. His story, his inspiration, this guy is just, he's fired up, man. He is excited. So he definitely stands out because Rob is just a really good guy. He's a caring guy and a giving guy. And man, the response to his podcast recently has just been incredible. Now, have I had bigger numbers on other people? Sure. But the response from the community with inbox things and stuff like that has been phenomenal. But I am so thankful for all. Like I said, I think I'm on the episode coming out this week will be number 29.
Okay,
and cool. All 29 of my guests so far have just been exceptional. And the cool part about this podcast is I get my own questions answered. So if I'm in a predicament or if I'm in the middle of something and I'm trying to figure things out, or if I'm wanting to do something, well, I'll just pick somebody for the podcast that can answer my questions.
Yeah. That's
and awesome. I'll ask them my questions and kind of, I know it's a little self-serving, but you know, hey, but the funny thing is somehow, no matter what I ask, there's always a handful of people out there that go, man, I really wanted to know that information also.
Yeah.
You know? Cool. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, as we're kind of moving into the last segment, so to speak, I've been asking everybody basically two types of questions centered around the name, so make or break. And so the make question is, of all of your projects, doesn't have to be something you put on YouTube or even on Instagram, is there one that really stands out to you as your favorite for whatever reason you would pick it?
Yeah, I made a gift box, a prayer box for my wife.
Oh, cool.
And it's made out of sapele. I'm trying to remember what else I used on it. I think I used another wood for the handle and this and that. But it was just, it meant so much making that box the entire time because my wife is just, I've been married for 20 years to this woman and she has just been the backbone of the entire thing. I have no idea on this earth how she has put up with me for all these years. That's just the honest truth. But as I was making this thing, I even found a guy that I really loved his music. He's an accomplished musician that does guitar work for a lot of movies and things. And I asked him, could I use one of his songs? And I did it in the video and it was just incredible to me. I'm not sure the video has the highest of my views or any, but it just worked out so perfect. And as I was making this thing, I could listen to that track in my head as I'm milling the boards and things. It was just one of those perfect moments. I didn't have a single glitch the entire time on this project. Every joint fit correctly. The lid went perfect. No tear outs, no nothing. And it was just a perfect project. I really enjoy it. And I even go back and watch the video and kind of just go, yeah, man, that was a good one.
That's awesome. That's really
yeah.
Good. Well, I would guess that those mistakes and those joints not working, that's probably more common in the things that you're working on, if you're anything, especially like me. So on the break question side of things, is there a moment where something really went wrong that really stands out? But also, is there kind of a lesson that you learned because of it?
Yeah, for sure. The one thing you'll absolutely notice about my videos, and let me say real quick, I've kind of been on a hiatus on my videos. I got injured at the beginning of the year, and I've gone through a few surgeries and things on my leg. They're wanting to do surgery again. I'm kind of weighing that option, but have no fear, everyone. I promise I will be back making videos again. I did weekly videos for almost 18 months, and I promise I will be back with weekly videos. So with that said, if you've watched any of my videos, you notice that any mistakes that I make or anything that happens, I make sure that I show those mistakes and I show how I've overcome those mistakes in the video. One thing I have a video, it's called, I'm trying to remember the exact title. It's called The Cedar Bowl. And then it's like dot, 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 that didn't make it. And cedar is a very finicky wood. And people have told me this. I've watched videos where people have said, be careful with cedar, be careful with cedar. So I made this cedar bowl, and I had this big plan that I was going to give this bowl to a really good friend of mine. And boy, I did not heed any of the warnings like don't turn cedar real fast because it will try and come apart. Don't cut too deep when turning cedar because it will come apart and crack. I've got this thing turned hammered wide open. I'm getting in there with a big bowl gouge, and lo and behold, this thing came apart. And when it came apart, man, it scared the crap out of me. Oh, wow. I'm not going to lie to you. Thank goodness. I always wear my shield. I always wear all my protection. And when this thing slung off, man, it went all over the place. It caught my arm, cut me a little bit on my arm, and I videoed the whole thing. It's all right there on video. And, you know, I went, man, I can't believe this did this. And I was so aggravated and so upset that it broke because I wanted to give this thing to my friend. I realized as I was sitting down, I was telling my wife about it, and I'm thinking, you know, this was my fault because I did not heed the warnings. I took for granted that I thought I knew what I was doing more than the people before me that said, hey, don't turn cedar real fast. Don't take a big cut, take fine cuts and make sure that it's supported well and make sure that the tendon doesn't break off of it. And that's, I think at the beginning, when I first started turning it, I broke the tendon off. I flipped it back around, put another tendon on it, and then I just kept pushing and kept pushing because I'm so hard-headed. From that moment on, I'd learned that I need to listen to people that kind of know a little bit more about me. That's the good thing about people making mistakes before you, is if you just kind of look around and see the mistakes they make, well, it'll save you a whole bunch of trouble. And of course, this just stems from my whole childhood. I was so hard-headed and didn't want to listen. It was kind of, people, you know, tell me all the time, they're like, well, I could never make videos like this person or do what this person does. And I'm like, so which video did you watch of theirs? Oh, well, I watched the one they did last week. And I'm like, go watch the video they did 4 years ago. Go watch the project they made 5 years ago. Go see what they did 10 years ago. You know, pay attention to what they do, take what they say as advice and kind of heed it a little bit. And that's what I try and do to this day, is pay a little more attention to people that know so much more than me, because I mean, there are so many people that know so much more about wood turning than I do. So I think that's what I got from that. Yep. The cedar bowl that didn't make it. And that thing had some sharp edges too, man. Woo.
That's nuts. When we had the Irma kind of come through Georgia, the winds. And so we had a couple cedar trees knocked into our backyard. So I was cutting them up. I'm like, I can make something out of this. But I was like, well, may not be turning a bowl out of them, it sounds like. So
I saw on your Instagram that you were cutting it up, and you were doing something at the time. And I was looking at the feed going, man, don't do that like that. Or I can't remember what it was. But then when you showed you were cutting it up, I'm trying to remember, everything was fine. And I said, well, you know, but yeah, cedar will get you, man. You gotta watch cedar.
Oh, yeah.
It'll light you up, brother. I promise.
Oh yeah. Definitely. Well, sweet. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me and chatting with me. For folks that are listening, any good places that you would send them as far as your personal work and the podcast and YouTube channel?
Yeah, just head on over to the greenwoodworkerpodcast.com. That's where most of the things are going on right now. You can find me on, find me everywhere. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TGWP.com is a lot easier. Well, it's TGWpodcast.com. I have all of them. I have all the sayings of it. I wanted to make it easy for everybody to get there. I'm always around. And if anybody ever has any questions, suggestions, people they'd like to see, anything like that, hey man, throw me a message, whether it's my Donnie Carter Instagram or the podcast Instagram or any way you want to send me a message. I'm happy to talk to you guys and help out any way that I can.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much for hanging out. It was a blast to last chat. And it's great to hear your stories and the things, especially your vision for the future. Sounds so cool in teaching. So that's going to be a fun story to watch.
Brandon, thank you, man, so much, brother. I wish you great success, man. I like this little podcast. This is it's going to be some good stuff. I know you've had some awesome guests so far, and thank you so much for allowing me to be one of the first ones out there.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Alrighty, guys, thank you for hanging to the end, and sorry again about that audio. I know it wasn't super great, but hopefully you got something great out of it. And if you did, the number one way you can support the show is by heading over to iTunes, looking up the Make or Break Show, and leaving a rating and review. Actually, we already have a couple up, which are amazing. So thank you to DI Watt Customs Woodworks, as well as Saper Up, who gave me a couple 5 stars. That is awesome. But if you guys can head over and leave me a review, you can even say, hey man, he forgot to turn his mic on. That is fine as well. So until next time, go make or break something in your shop.